Welcome to Recalculating America. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America and has been named the best small business book in the Independent Press Awards competition. Each Recalculating program is dedicated to helping small business leaders add profits through efficient growth. During every Recalculating program, experts will give listeners useful information about starting or growing their small business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do.
Dan Perkins here, and I'm your co-host along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating, the radio program that has evolved out of the award-winning book dedicated to helping small business leaders increase their profits. We draw our name from the book named the Best Small Business Book of 2017 by the Independent Press. This book features contributions of more than 100 presidents, experts, and leaders, all whom offer you ways to grow your small business.
You know, Dan, right on time, is our next guest. He's with PayPal, and he's here to tell us some very interesting things. So, Dan, do our introduction.
Yeah. Good morning, Amit. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Good morning.
Could you please help me so I don't do a terrible job? Could you pronounce your last name for me?
Sure. It is Mathradas.
Mathradas. Wonderful.
Yep.
Thank you so much. Well, welcome to our program. I'm a PayPal user myself, so tell us about yourself and how long you've been with PayPal, what brought you there, and then what do you do at PayPal?
So, you know, I've spent most of my career within the technology space. You know, spent a number of years starting off at Dell, where I led a number of, Dell's initiatives into new forefronts, and in my last role there, was running a small business for Dell. You know, been with PayPal about a little over a year and a half, and today I head up the merchant or small business division here for North America. And, you know, what brought me over to PayPal is, I think, as everyone knows, the world is changing. You know, cash is still king, but, the rain is declining, and more people are moving into the digital realm. And more people are looking for easier ways to pay. And as PayPal is today, the largest in that ecosystem and, a full solution provider, it just seemed too exciting an opportunity, especially given my background in serving small business, for it to make perfect sense for me. And that's what brought me over.
Well, as I said to you just before, as we started, that I'm a PayPal user. It's amazing to me what's happened to your company. I'm an author, and I do occasionally do children's books, and I'm working with an illustrator in India, and mm-hmm. I pay her through PayPal. Just an amazing piece of technology. As somebody in charge of small business in North America, what's happening in that segment for your company? And what observations do you have about its prospects?
So, what's happening today is, as I mentioned, is, more and more consumers are now in the digital realm. You know, obviously everyone knows that, buying online and shopping online has become massively prevalent. But the other big trend that is emerging is, most of the traffic is now actually coming from mobile devices, smartphones and tablets. And that has brought its own, unique challenges for small business. So that's, one of the things that we are seeing in some of the technologies and solutions that we're bringing out to help merchants kind of cope with those changes and, more importantly, even adopt and accelerate using, the shift to mobile that's happening. The other big change that we are seeing is, choice is becoming really important. Consumers. So PayPal, just to give your listeners a little bit of background, has about 203 million active users. 16 million of those are merchants or small businesses, and about 187 is consumers. And what we're seeing is, you know, more and more consumers want multiple ways to pay. You know, the, if you, as you said, you know, you use PayPal to pay your providers in India, but you know, PayPal used to be known as the button online. Today, we do full stack payment solutions, you know, end to end for a merchant, but also provide consumers the ability to say, hey, do you want to pay with your bank account? Do you want to pay with your Visa or MasterCard? And all those transactions and all those partnerships that we are bringing today is something that is actually accelerating payments for our merchants, as well as improving that conversion.
So when you look at your business, at least it sounded like the numbers that you were talking about, the number of small businesses that you have, it's small business appears to be an important, very important part of your company. Is that a fair observation?
It is a very fair observation. And as your listeners probably know, you know, small businesses are a big part of the U.S. economy, and you
yes.
know, is the number one growth driver for jobs and revenue growth. So, just you know, like the demographic of what's happening within you know North America, you know, small business serves as a very important piece of our solution set as well.
You know, I just noticed this morning the ADP numbers came out, and they were stronger than expected.
Mm-hmm.
And if you dig down into the report, they talked about the difference between small business and large business. Small
yep.
businesses in this report added 83,000, where big businesses only contributed 57,000. And that small businesses range between the typical small business calculation. We here at Recalculating know that small businesses is the growth opportunity of this economy going forward. Let me throw it over to my partner, Don. You want to ask our guests some questions?
Well, yes. My first question is, in a recent survey, cybersecurity and
mm-hmm.
Security against fraud has really risen high into small business leaders' concerns. What is PayPal doing to help prevent fraud and improve the quality of cyber protection?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, we're really fortunate, you know, with the numbers of that I mentioned of 16 million merchants that we have in our base and the ability for us to listen and talk and poll them on a daily basis to understand what their challenges are. And you're right, you know, cybersecurity is one of the things that has rapidly bubbled to the top. So, you know, from a PayPal perspective, given that we are in the payment space and in the e-commerce space, as well as omnichannel, you know, that is obviously a key thing that is on top of mind for us. So the way we're addressing it, you know, the nature of PayPal itself, you know, at some level serves to kind of combat fraud and cybersecurity and help with cybersecurity. And what I mean by that is, you know, PayPal, if you think about it as a user, if you are a consumer paying a merchant, you know, what you're doing is you're using your Pay with PayPal button. And, you know, from a merchant standpoint, that transaction occurs. There is no credit card information exchange. There is no bank information exchange. It's all being done on the PayPal platform. So that in itself, you know, by removing, you know, credit card numbers, removing bank account numbers and all the things that you know, are potentially a threat to fraud, that's where, you know, PayPal really kind of comes to bear. The other big thing that we do, which I feel, you know, is something that I know our merchants say adds a lot of value, is things like buyer protection and seller protection. So if you are a PayPal consumer paying, you know, a merchant which is accepts PayPal and there is any dispute or, you know, either side of the coin, you know, PayPal is the platform that you're using. And so we ensure that if the buyer has paid for the product and it hasn't shown up or there's an issue, we cover the buyer. And on the other side, if there's a seller that has sold something to one of the 200 million PayPal users itself and something goes wrong from their end, we have them covered. So I think those are some of the ways beyond just the back-end technology of, you know, being PCI compliant and the stuff and things like that, which are industry standards. I think PayPal itself is really a platform to avoid fraud and kind of help in secure your business.
Well, I guess the next question is, you have a choice. You can pay by credit card or you can pay by PayPal. And the feature I love most is you can pay it over time or, mm-hmm. or not time. Can you explain that to our audience, what you mean by that? It's a fascinating payment schedule that I'm told is really of great value to small business.
Yeah, so one of the you know, the beauties of PayPal, and one of the things that I'm really bullish about how we serve the market and how our customers, you know, kind of have told us that they want to be served is we serve, you know, and we are a one-stop shop. So not only do we do, you know, the traditional PayPal button that you mentioned, but we also do full-stack credit card processing, in-field payments if you're at a trade show and you want to accept payments. But the other major solutions that we provide to help both consumers as well as merchants are things like consumer credit. So one of the things that you can do, for example, if you are on a site and you see a watch and it's $1,000 and you're like, yeah, that may be a little bit more expensive than I can afford today. If you are a PayPal user or even non-user, you can actually opt in for PayPal credit. And, you know, we rapidly, in about a few seconds, you know, give you an approval and give you a credit line. And then you can just, and it's 6 months, same as cash with no interest. And you can pay it off as you choose to, you know, as your payment, you know, choice you want to bear. And that is something that has helped merchants really increase their conversion. And give consumers the option of really getting into solutions, products, services that they need today, but with the flexibility to pay over time.
I wanted to ask a follow-up question here, Mike, on what Don's talking about. Are you still a bank, or are you no longer a bank?
We are not a bank.
So how do you extend credit if you're not a bank?
Well, so we have partners that we work with that effectively are on the back end serving as the providers. And, you know, given for a consumer and for a merchant, that is very seamless because PayPal is the entity that they're dealing with and PayPal is the one that takes on the responsibility for that loan. So, you know, they're not going through any of the back-end processes. They're dealing with PayPal itself.
I see. Okay. What do you think are your – we've got about maybe 2 minutes before we hit our first break. Tell me about what you think are the opportunities going forward for your operation that you could see significant growth.
Well, one is, you know, as I'd mentioned earlier, you know, one of the things that PayPal is doing – pretty effectively, and we are kind of expanding on is our partnership rent. So, you know, we just signed a deal with Visa and MasterCard and Discover. And what that, you know, I mentioned earlier is allowing consumers really to have the choice of which mechanism they want to use to pay. And that is really driving a lot of growth for our merchant side of the business, but also consumers from a standpoint of, you know, giving them the option of how they want to pay. And the second side of the partnership lens is we also work very closely with the ecosystem, and you know, I'd love to talk to you about a new solution we have called Business in a Box that actually is taking advantage of that. And the ecosystem I'm talking about is, you know, players in the e-com space such as BigCommerce and Shopify and Magento, as well as players in the accounting space such as Xero and Intuit. And we're really partnering with all of them to provide a one-stop shop and a solution for both consumers and merchants.
Well, we have about a minute for our first break. When we come back, I'd love to talk to us about your in-a-box program. That sounds interesting. What do you expect the economy will do, and how will that affect your growth prospects?
Well, you know, not being an economist, you know, I'm going to stay away from answering, you know, which way the economy is going to go. But what we are seeing today is, you know, and I think, you know, from the earlier comments that were made, look, hiring is improving. Small businesses are doing better. They are the engine of growth. We are, you know, heavily behind them. And what we're seeing is more and more people now moving to, you know, mobile platforms, more and more people adopting digital payments for from a safety perspective, but also from an ease of use perspective. And so I'm personally bullish on, you know, where the market goes and in how much upside there is. But, you know, that's my viewpoint. And I feel like, you know, as we hear more and more from our customers over the year, we'll have a better picture of that.
We need to take a break to play a commercial for one of our sponsors, BizCom. We'll be right back and continue our conversation with Amit.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Don't let hackers get your data. Email is insecure and can't handle large files. Instead, use BizCom's secure file transfer product. Military-grade security that's as easy to use as email, and it can handle attachments of any size. Visit BizCom.com for your free trial and make sure your private communications stay private. That's BizCom.com.
Amit, welcome back. This is our guru from PayPal talking about his new passion, Business in a Box. Amit, tell us about your new program.
From all the feedback we have gotten from, you know, talking to our customers and merchants in the market, the number one, you know, one of the main challenges they face when they are starting a new business or expanding an existing business is, you know, they are looking for solutions, and they are looking for people that can actually help curate the solutions and point them in the right direction of how do I kind of go build up and take a little bit of the guesswork out of finding the right options out there and letting the customer, you know, and letting the merchant focus on what they do best, which is running their business. And so given, you know, the comment I made earlier around how we are really active in the partnership world and driving solutions with a number of our partners, for us it became pretty obvious based on what we were seeing that PayPal was in a unique position to help these small businesses set up and grow their business. And so we created a solution called PayPal Business in a Box. And what it really is it starts with you opening a PayPal business account. And that business account, as you know, sits within an e-com store so that you can accept payments online, sits in, and works with partners such as Intuit and Xero so that you can transport all your data from what your sales are to run your finances at the end of the year. You know, that PayPal account is also used to create a PayPal Here solution so you can accept payments in the field. And the other big part of it is eventually over time that data of your transaction, your history, is used by PayPal to extend working capital loans, which are the lifeblood of what merchants and small businesses need, which is cash flow. And so we created this solution, and today a merchant can easily come in, you know, set up an account and then opt in and say, I want to set up an e-com store. And we have a very easy way of having the merchant kind of work with our partner to do that. I want to set up and get an accounting solution. Over time, I want to get, you know, working capital. And that all resides in this business in a box solution. So we're really excited, you know, and, you know, we're hoping our merchants, you know, we've just launched this probably about a month ago. And we're, you know, based on the feedback from our merchants, we're hoping that this is something that we are going to continually be expanding on.
Terrific. Don has a question for you. You there, Don?
Yes, I am. You know, the biggest impediment to growth in the medical marijuana industry is the inability to make payments across state lines. This is a loaded question a bit, but for instance, in Colorado, many small businesses lack the ability to deposit their money or do anything like that. Is PayPal doing anything in that area?
So, you know, that's a great question. Today, you know, we are not. You know, we still follow federal guidelines and laws around, you know, which industries we actually are participating in, which is most of them. But, you know, this is one of those where I think there is an opportunity down the road for us to relook and see what's happening. But as of today, and just based on, you know, where the federal laws are, we do not participate in that market.
It's interesting. But let me go on to the next question. How do you help small businesses detect fraud? For instance, some shyster hits four or five companies at the same time. Do you have programs for that?
So yeah, so what, you know, one of the great, I guess, internal secrets, or great, the secret sauce of PayPal is, you know, we have a very robust risk department. And if, as I mentioned earlier, you know, if that transaction is occurring from a PayPal user to a PayPal merchant, regardless of how they're paying, given that it's on our platform, we have the solutions such as, you know, seller protection to protect that merchant from these fraudulent transactions. But if not, you know, if it is an outside, you know, someone who is not a PayPal consumer, working with a, you know, trying to fraud a PayPal merchant. Now, I would never say that it is foolproof, but, you know, one of the things we do have is our years and years of experience in the risk space that actually monitors every transaction that's going on from all these merchants. And if we find anything suspicious, you know, the first thing we do is inform the merchant that, hey, something is going on. And in some cases, you know, we even pause a little bit with them to inform them and say, we are not... we recommend that you stop these transactions. So I think that's one of the ways that we are helping them and in doing this deliberately so that, you know, in some cases there could be legitimate transactions with one customer on multiple times, but our job really is to help monitor that for merchants and really red flag it as soon as possible when we see it and we know it's kind of happening. The other beauty of that is if that same consumer is doing this across multiple PayPal merchants, that is another trigger for us. Right, where our risk department looks at it and saying, hey, this one user is transacting multiple times from one location for one product on all these different platforms. So I think all those things coming together adds a little bit of power to the solution that we provide.
One more question, Dan, and I'll turn it back to you. But of all of the various industries you run across, do you see any two or three that are really seeing a significant gain in sales over the past year?
So, you know, the services space is, from what we see, is definitely one that is growing pretty actively and aggressively. And that is, you know, that would be expected because from all, and that correlates to things that you're mentioning around, you know, what's happening in the job market. And as things in the economy improve, the first thing that happens is more new small businesses are created, and existing small businesses start actually driving more revenue. And a lot of them kind of move into the services arena, which is kind of broad. So to us, that's a natural first state of where we're seeing some upside. But I would say generally that the health, you know, of the file is pretty robust across the most across a lot of different bases.
Well, let me follow with a more mundane question. You have a specialty operation, small business. So if we have a listener out there that wants to find out more information about not only PayPal, but what they can do with a small business, what's the best contact to go to?
I would provide your listener two areas. One, if they just want to find out about our products and what we offer and how they all fit together, you know, PayPal.com would be a great starting point. You know, one of the things that we are also doing, coinciding with National Small Business Week, which was, you know, the first week of May, we do have a sitelet that's been built out, which features stories of, you know, small businesses and how they're giving back to their communities, but also solutions and tips and tools and activities on how you really can set up, expand, sell globally, set up your online payments, or, you know, all those different solutions. And that is under paypal.com/smallbizmatters. And so I would encourage them to go to that site, learn about how some of our merchants are actually using PayPal and how they're using it to actually give back to the community, but then also learn tips and tools of how they can adopt some of those features into their own business and ecosystems.
Amit, we're out of time, and it's been a delightful to have you on and to learn more about, for myself, about PayPal, and hopefully our listeners will have learned more about PayPal, and perhaps we can drive some business towards your new business in a box. So thank you for joining us.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you for being a PayPal user.
You bet. We'll be right back after this message.
Hate your old fax machine? You can now fax through email. simply write an email, attach the document, and send. Works with all major email providers. Get rid of the noisy and expensive old fax machine and try Biscom's Cloud Fax. Our solutions are great for businesses of all sizes. Visit Biscom.com for your free trial. That's BISCOM.com.
Dan Perkins here with your recalculating small business tip of the day. You know what spilled milk smells like in a few days in a hot car? Many small business people use their trucks or cars as transportation for them and in some cases employees. It's also a place to do business and you want to keep it clean. I have a builder friend that took a new employee to a job site who packed his lunch. At lunchtime, he bought a carton of milk to go with his sandwich. One day, the worker didn't finish the milk and set the bottle on the floor. When he shut the door, the milk fell over and spilled on the floor and sat there for the rest of the day, and then the employee returned and noticed that the milk had been spilled. My friend tried everything to get out that foul smell, but after spending a considerable sum on carpet cleaners, eventually he had to replace the carpet. Make sure you carry at least one roll of paper towels. The nose you save may be your own. Check out recalculating.biz for more useful small business suggestions. This has been Dan Perkins with your small business tip of the day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful. Now it's time for Money in Motion. Dan Perkins is our resident expert in making the money you earn work as hard as you do. Here is Dan Perkins.
Well, welcome back. As more and more small companies face employment issues, finding solutions is often difficult. Cornelius, will you please pronounce your last name?
Gamblin.
Gamblin. Cornelius Gamblin is one of the author of a book, The Big Book of HR. And she's here to talk about how their wonderful book can help you as a small businessman. Welcome, Cornelia, and please tell us about yourself, your book, and how people can get in touch with you.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on today. I have been a human resources practitioner and executive for quite a number of years now. Let's just say more than two decades. So, and it's really, I've seen a lot of changes in the field, as have my co-author has. You know, when you're managing people and you're working with people, it can be very, very dynamic, and we're seeing so many changes today. So one of the reasons that we wrote the Big Book of HR was to reach out to the small business audience because, you know, oftentimes a small business owner doesn't really understand, you know, all of the diverse issues that are involved when you're trying to, you know, to manage people in a way that's going to get them to be motivated and produce the best results for you. And at the same time, you know, when you're not, you know, stepping on any legal pitfalls that you may encounter along the way. So, you know, we really hope to use this kind of as a good guide so people can recognize there's a lot more to managing people than just, you know, finding them and hiring them and then terminating the employment relationship at some point. You know, there's everything that goes on in between.
Cornelia, the book of HR that you've written, is this a must for every HR department? I guess as an author, you'd like it to have that, right?
I was going to say, yes, I think it is a must for every HR department, and it's a must for every small business owner as well. You know, there's a lot of businesses that you know, don't have a formal HR function, you know, especially a small business, and, you know, there may be somebody that's doing, you know, a lot of different tasks, including human resources. So, you know, we think it's a very, very good reference guide for somebody. If they're not quite sure about something, they can get a ready answer to it. And we also point the readers to a lot of other resources where they can find more in-depth information if it's something that they, you know, they need to know a little bit more about.
Dan, can I jump in here? I had the pleasure of having an advanced copy of the book, and I've been perusing it. And I realized that I've, in the past, violated every rule in the book.
Well, I'm glad you have it now.
Yes.
Maybe he wished he didn't.
But I was fortunate enough to escape most of it. But someone once told me in the HR business that what HR really does is try to manage the exceptions rather than it can create the norm, but its biggest problem is dealing with the exceptions. And I'm going to ask you, Cornelia, a question which really deals with the fact how do you as a small business deal with that exception, the person who doesn't bathe, the individual who refuses to fill out forms, or the person that looks postal. How does your book help people deal with those issues?
Well, you know, you've used a lot of different examples that, you know, come across in a lot of different ways. You know, I think for any business, you know, large or small, if you communicate expectations to your employees and let them know, you know, the, you know, for example, behavior in the workplace, you know, these are acceptable forms of behavior that we, you know, we expect from somebody. And, you know, if you're not conforming to, you know, to our expectations, we're going to have some discussions about it. And, you know, and because I'm talking, you know, not about extreme behavioral problems in this case, but, you know, people not getting to work on time and, you know, when it's necessary for them to be there. And so, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, some of the, you know, the actions that managers can take around, you know, having a good discipline process in the workplace and applying it consistently to people. So people realize that, yes, you're serious about it and that you know what to expect. But then, you know, when you've got some of the more severe issues, like, you alluded to, somebody going postal in the workplace, that's where you really want to be aligned with some other professionals. You know, you may have an employee assistance program, and I can't speak enough about how helpful they can be. You know, and a lot of times for a small business, you know, they may have those services through their health care plan. So that's something to look into. But, you know, if you're dealing with somebody whose behavior, you know, seems to be extreme, there may be some other problems going on in that individual's life. And, you know, even for a more experienced HR professional like myself, I'm not in the position to try to, you know, diagnose what's going on with somebody and fix their problem. That's where I would turn to, you know, the professionals at an employee assistance program and, you know, refer the person to the EAP so that they can get the appropriate professional help that they need.
Oh, Dan, I could go on and on, but let me... Let me deal with a subject that's dear both to Dan and myself, which is you have a veteran in your employ, and that veteran is showing signs of problems adjusting. Do you help small business deal with that, or is that something beyond the scope?
You know, that's another area where perhaps an employee assistance program can come into play, because they have a lot of people who are counselors and also coaches that can help people if they're, you know, if they're transitioning, you know, back into the civilian workforce from a military workforce. And you know, I think we all recognize that is a big challenge, and you know, everybody wants to get behind you know, our veterans who have served so admirably for us, and you know, sometimes they just kind of need that reassurance that, you know, yes, they're going to be fitting in. And, you know, again, if they're showing signs of you know, some kind of trauma, that's where you definitely want to get the EAP involved. But, you know, there are other resources usually in a community that can help with coaching and counseling. you know, to help people make that transition back into the civilian life. And you know, if you're fortunate enough to live, you know, close to a military base, a lot of time the bases themselves, you know, will work with the community and resources in the community to help to make a smoother transition for these individuals.
Now, that's called a Warrior and Transition Unit, and it's designed specifically by the Department of Defense to help those men and women soldiers who are having difficulty or make experience difficulty in assimilating back into the culture.
Absolutely.
If I might go in a little different direction. one of the things I think that must make a human resources person have nightmares at night is how to interpret in the workforce political correctness. And go ahead,
if you wanted to say
no, I'm just
else.
Curious about whether your book deals with the issue of the ever-changing face of political correctness.
We didn't address that specifically in this book. You know, we do talk about, you know, many of the laws that are around equal employment opportunity and non-discrimination. We actually wrote a separate book, The Essential Workplace Conflict Handbook, that we talk a lot about, you know, the changes in the workplace and how to address a lot of that. You know, we unfortunately are in a time where you know, civility, I think, is starting to wear on everybody in our society. And, you know, when we talk about political correctness, it's for me personally, I like to turn that around and talk about having respectful behavior towards each other in the workplace, because that's really what we want to strive to have. You know, there's It may seem like, you know, someone's making an offhanded comment about a group of individuals, but those kinds of comments can be very disruptive in the workplace. And, you know, the way I've always addressed it and have counseled other people to address it is to just think about the impact that comment may have on someone else. And if it had that impact on you, if somebody said something that you know, you might feel it was an attack on you or individuals that are in your group, how would that make you feel? And is that a respectful and professional way that you want to be, you know, you want to be behaving in the workplace? You know, we spend an awful lot of time at work, probably in some cases more time with the people we work with than with our family members. And so I think it's important that we, you know, we recognize that when we come to work, it is a professional workplace, and we want to make sure that, you know, we're approaching it in a professional manner and conducting, you know, the way we interact with people in a professional and a respectful manner.
So are you saying, excuse me, Don, I just want to follow up on that.
Yeah,
are
please
you
do.
Are you saying that there is less civility in the workforce today? And if so, is that a reaction to the influence of political correctness in the workforce? You also use the word feelings. How do you feel about that? Do businesses run on feelings, or do they run on solid business decisions?
Oh, I think they want to run on solid business decisions, but if there is behavior that is being perceived as disrespectful, that's going to be very disruptive to the workplace, and you're not going to be able to accomplish what the business is setting out to accomplish. So I think to set a bar high on the way the company, the organization expects people to behave, is a very, very positive thing to do, and it's certainly in line for a lot of organizations with their values. You know, they want people to be treated with respect, you know, not only by management, but by their coworkers as well.
Good New Year. We have to take a break, but we'll be right back and to continue the conversation with you. We'll be right back after this message.
Thank you.
Don't let hackers get your data. Email is insecure and can't handle large files. Instead, use Biscom's Secure File Transfer product. Military-grade security that's as easy to use as email, and it can handle attachments of any size. Visit Biscom.com for your free trial and make sure your private communications stay private. That's BISCOM.com.
Cornelia, we're ladies and gentlemen, back with Cornelia, and she's the author of the big book on HR. But before we go too much further, is there a website for the book and yourself? And if so,
yes,
what is it?
Yes, there is. The website is bigbookofhr.com.
And is it available there or are there other places?
You can purchase the book. There are links on our website. You can purchase it through Amazon, through Barnes & Noble, or through any independent bookseller.
Okay.
Cornelia, can I jump in here? By the way,
sure.
I love the name Cornelia. It's such a wonderful name.
Thank you.
Would you also mention your co-author?
Yes, I wrote the book with a very, very good colleague, Barbara Mitchell. We have known each other for quite a number of years, and we both spent a lot of our careers in HR. And you know, it was kind of a natural coming together for us when we started writing together, because we, you know, we had different areas of HR where we, you know, one was stronger than the other, and we were able to, you know, to bring our collective expertise together as we put together the big book of HR. That was our first big writing venture, and then from there we've written the second book, the Essential Workplace Conflict Handbook, and we've got a third book coming out in the fall, the Conflict Resolution Phrase Book. Our publisher just keeps coming back to us with these great ideas, so we love doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, Cornelia, I'm going to follow up with what Dan said because many years ago, I told a joke at a meeting that quote offended someone, but it was a story I've told for years, and I realized that we've become much more sensitive over time. It wasn't so much a joke as a true story about when I was a kid. But my question, I guess, is: have we become too sensitive about issues in the workplace? I mean, there was a time when you could joke around about a lot of things, and people would understand that was a way of dealing with humor. Yet we seem to be constantly coming up about new ways of, quote, being offended, unquote.
You know, I think a lot of the changes that we're seeing is that the workforce itself has changed a lot. You know, and particularly when we look at the entrance of a lot of younger people into today's workforce, the millennials and the generation behind them. You know, these are people that grew up in a much different world than, say, the baby boomers did. They're used to a much more diverse society than, you know, a lot of their older coworkers grew up in, and I think, you know, for that reason they're more aware. I don't know if it's so much sensitive, but they're certainly much more aware that, you know, people have much different backgrounds that they bring into the workplace, and you know, it's that richness of backgrounds that brings different experiences into the workplace today that can really make it very exciting. you know, it's often, you know, people feel like, gee, does this mean that we can't have, you know, a sense of levity in the workplace? And you know, and absolutely not. You know, I think, you know, as I said earlier, we spend so much time at work, you know, everybody doesn't want to walk around feeling, you know, buttoned down all the time. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I think we want to be aware that, you know, what we may find funny, you know, may not be what somebody else finds funny based on, you know, on their background and their experiences. So, you know, I think the awareness has been raised that there are a lot of differences in today's workplace. And, you know, the best way to understand them is to talk about it. You know, try to learn as much about your coworkers as possible. And don't make assumptions that, you know, everybody kind of, you know, sees the world through the same eyes that you do. You know, I think that's probably one of the biggest things that gets confused around, you know, this whole notion of, are we being too sensitive, or, you know, are people getting too offended? And I think it's more of, let's be more aware that, you know, we all bring rich backgrounds into the workplace. Let's get to know each other a little bit more and do it in a way that's respectful.
Well, let me follow up with that. A couple of observations. I read a report recently where you were discussing the millennials coming into the workforce. And it contended that the workforce of the millennials today are more crude and more rude, especially female workers, than at any time in most people's memory. So that is almost a dichotomy. We talk about being respectful, yet the vulgarity of the office, both men and women, seems to be on the rise. In addition, that sensitivity that you're talking about leads me to a follow-up question, and that is, one of the things that some of us believe that made America great was the assimilation of all cultures into a common American culture. I believe today that we are segregating ourselves into subcultures and are not assimilating into a common bond, and that also creates tension in the workforce.
Well, I think that goes back to the notion of there's a lot of differences in today's workplace. There are four generations in the workplace today. There are, you know, people that are coming from different backgrounds. You know, I don't know if it's so much a lack of assimilation as just trying to appreciate that we all have something different to contribute. You know, it goes back to what do we all bring based on the backgrounds that we had, you know, that we were raised in, for example. You know, we're also a society that's much more mobile than perhaps, you know, a generation or two ago, where people grew up and lived and worked pretty much in the same community. And now people move around a lot. I know I myself, you know, as well as my co-author, we've had the opportunities to live in different places throughout the country. We've both lived on the West Coast in different areas. We've both lived in the Midwest. And so we've seen that, you know, it's different in different places that you live. And we bring a lot of those experiences with us. You know, I would say the same thing with, you know, military families. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about veterans and getting them to assimilate back into the civilian culture. But, you know, you think about the world that a lot of military families have grown up in, and they've been exposed to a lot. And, you know, those are very, very rich experiences. So, you know, I think it's all of these things that come into play that we are a much more mobile society. People do get to experience different things throughout their life. And, you know, I mean, I know myself from having lived in a lot of different areas. I've seen cultural differences within the United States itself. You know, I spent a lot of number of years living in the Southwest, and my son lives there now, and it's much different from where I'm living in the Washington D.C. area, and up and down the East Coast. So, you know, I think that's a lot of what contributes to what we see going on today.
And what about the issue of vulgarity in the office, both men and women?
I think that's unfortunate if, in fact, that's happening. I'd not heard that. And, you know, to me that, you know, that flies in the face of, you know, having a respectful workplace. And I think that's something that organizations should be addressing.
Well, we've got just about a minute to go, Don. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to ask her, what are the two or three main issues that you've discovered that small businesses face in the HR area?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges is a lot of the changes in the laws and the regulations. A lot of changes in technology as well. Technology, on one hand, is making things easier, but you know, a lot of small businesses can really be challenged by them if they don't have the resources to really implement some of these things that can help them to work better and to get or to work smarter when their resources themselves are limited. So those are some of the things that we see. Also, you know, trying to find the right people to fill the positions within your organization. You know, that is so important. That you get the right people that have the skills that you need and that are also going to fit into the culture of your organization.
Okay. We're out of time, Cornelia. Thank you for joining us. The book is The Big Book of HR, available at your local bookstore. Cornelia, thank you for joining us. And it's time for our tip of the day.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Dan Perkins here for Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. People are concerned about the massive hack to computer systems that took place in over 150 nations just a few weeks ago.
Could you?
Were you protected? So here's the tip of the day. Close the windows and doors in your computer. If the windows and doors are locked, the bad guys can't get in. And the best way to lock the windows and doors in your computer is to turn it off when you're done for the day. If you leave the computer on 24/7, bad guys can attack you when you are asleep or away. You lock the doors and windows of your home when you leave home, don't you? So lock the doors and windows of your computer. If you have employees, make sure they turn off their computers when they leave for the day. Make sure you set your computers to automatic download for system updates. That way you will always have the most recent operating system. Just turn off the computers and you'll have a new title, the head of cybersecurity for your business. Go to recalculating.biz for more helpful tips. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Well, Don, we have a market that doesn't want to go down. And we have a meeting next week with OPEC on what to do. We had a situation where oil markets sold off from their interim highs of about less than $54 down to $45, $46. News came out yesterday that OPEC is considering extending the production cuts into 2018. I'm not sure that extending the production cuts 1.8 million barrels a day is enough. We'll find out next week. The market rallied about 3% yesterday when the news came out about the possibility of extending the production cut, but it's not done very much early this morning. So I expect we're going to be in a fairly stagnant position until we hear what the outcome of the meeting is next on the 25th. Now, the scenario, as I said, is that OPEC wants to extend the production cuts for another up into 2018, which would take at least 12, a total of 12 months from the start to the end, maybe as much as 18. The International Energy Agency is reporting that
Actually, production went up on a global basis, even though OPEC cut it in the first 90 days of this year. I think it's interesting, a couple of interesting things about oil production. Right now, the United States has almost twice as many rigs drilling for oil and natural gas as it had 12 months ago. 12 months ago, and I know it seems like a long time, we were at the end of the world when crude oil was down around $26 a barrel. So a lot of people are drilling for oil in the United States, not so much everywhere else in the world. I think Saudi Arabia added one or two rigs. I think that's beginning to show as their revenues have declined so dramatically. They just don't have the money to take care of their people and to drill for new wells and new sources of oil, and more importantly, maintain the pipelines they already have. So I would expect to see in the next 12 months, if crude oil stays in the 45 to, say, 52 range, we're going to see more shutdowns or breaking of pipelines and stopping of flow, because the OPEC nations just don't have the money to maintain their facilities or their pipelines. Most interesting thing that I saw in the last week was how much it costs to move a barrel of oil out of the Dakotas. The pipeline is not open yet. It's going to bring that oil through a pipeline. That oil has been shipped in the past by tanker cars, a lot of it on Warren Buffett's railroads. I saw a report over the weekend that said that the cost differential between shipping a barrel of crude oil over the continent in pipelines versus trains is $3 a barrel. $3. That's a huge amount of money given the amount of oil. So as that Dakota pipeline comes on, the cost to lift and transport of that Dakota pipeline oil through a pipeline is going to drop dramatically, because not only is the $3 a barrel going to switch to something much lower than that, they're now able to drill wells in the Dakotas in 3 to 5 days. 3 to 5 days, they're able to discover oil. So they've become immensely more efficient. President Trump is expanding the market for American oil. We're now exporting over 1 million barrels a day and growing. China is going to be a big customer. India will be a big customer. So we're taking market share away from OPEC. The jobs are coming as far as the pipeline jobs. People are being hired. The question is that the markets tend to be a leading indicator as opposed to a coincident or lagging indicator. So you're going to see the reason why this market is going the way it's going is that it's telling us that the market looks 6 to 9 months down the road to the fall of 2017. Things are going to continue to be pretty good. So I think you have an opportunity to invest. I'm telling my clients, however, until this situation with China is resolved, I'm going to sit on my cash. That's my
now, Dan, Let me ask you a question. Ford yesterday announced that it was going to reduce its worldwide workforce by 10%. Our guest that was just on said that small businesses are hiring. What does that in about the minute we have left? What does that tell you about the future?
Well, the mechanization in the automobile industry, which has been around a long time, they're getting more and more robotics into the system, so they need less and less people. As you and I have talked many times on both of our shows, the implication of robotics in heavy manufacturing is something that we're going to have to live with. And if Ford can use robotic technology to expand its production, it should do that. There was an article recently about a plant in Pennsylvania that's going to build robots. And they're saying it's going to have 12 to 15 people in the whole place. So robotics is something that we're going to have to live with going forward. Back to you.
Well, Dan, we've had an interesting day today.
Mm-hmm. Some interesting guests and some lots of things for our business partners, the entrepreneurs of America who are listening to our show, can take and put into productive use. So that's all we've got for today. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success.